Committee of the Whole will come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 96. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 96 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to alcohol and catering permits, exempting certain locations from an annual limitation on catering permits as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom referred House Bill 96, Catering Permit Limitation, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Klim, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, and Schwartz. To no votes, Representatives Barlow and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petroff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 96 do pass. There are no amendments, and if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and explain the bill.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Okay, so this bill is dealing with catering permits. And what a catering permit is it's something that is issued to a retail liquor license holder to allow them to do off-site events. So, for instance, someone who owns a bar or who owns a liquor store could set up a bar at a wedding or a fundraising event. They're allowed to be issued up to 24 of these licenses every year. So that's two a month or however it's spread out. So it's not that many licenses. So if they have two weddings a week in the summer, it might go pretty quickly. So what we're trying to do in this bill is to have permits that are issued for events at the University of Wyoming not count against the liquor license holder's limit of 24 permits. And the reason that this has come about primarily at this time is because of a lease, or the conference center at the university is currently being leased by an outside entity that holds a liquor license, a regular retail liquor license. So they handle all of the bar services, they handle all of the food service services, and that lease is being mutually terminated by the entity that's leasing it and the university. So the university is going to be having events at the conference center. They have events at the, I think I can say it because it's in the bill, the Marion Rochelle Gateway Center, and other events around campus. And so this is going to increase the number of permits needed for that location if they decide to permit with outside liquor license holders. They currently have the ability to file for and apply for a liquor license, but they don't want to be in the liquor business. So I checked on the availability list, and the city that where the university is does have an available liquor license, but again, the university does not want to be in the business of selling alcohol. So what they would prefer to do is give the opportunity for their local businesses to be able to cater these events. The challenge for the local businesses is the limitation of the number of permits that they can be issued. So you'll see on your desk that there's a letter of support from the industry that the association where these businesses belong to. It came up in committee that these events are not geared towards students, that there is a lot of rental of the space for events for the community. It's the biggest venue that community has, so it's rented out for all kinds of events. Last week there was even an event that a church requested for a funeral service where the church just wasn't big enough to hold the event. So, you know, again, this is just a way of giving the businesses in that community an opportunity to be involved with these services and not have the university have to participate. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 96 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill number 96 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 99. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 99 from Representative Connolly, an act relating to general statutory provisions providing that statutes, memorials, and resolutions shall be written in gender-neutral terms as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 99, Statutes, Gender-Neutral Terms, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Freeman, Kirkby, Petroff, and Schwartz. Those who voted no, Representatives Klim, Larson, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 99 do pass. And there is no standing committee amendment, but there's a Committee of the Whole amendment. And if it's okay with the Chairman, I'll explain the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Please proceed.
Thank you. The Committee of the Whole amendment was designed to say that if we pass this bill, that any future statutes that are written, that we don't have to go backwards to rewrite old statutes in order to change them to gender-neutral terms. And so even though this is already stated in the bill, this specifies that it would only be the new language that is changed in the bill and not the whole statute that would be affected. And so if there are no questions on the amendment, I would call the question on the amendment.
Chairman Petroff, would you please move the amendment first?
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Is there any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, would we be able to... Oh, here's the sponsor. Okay, so with that, I will leave explanation of the bill to Representative Connolly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and my apologies to the body. Your committee, too, was still meeting. Okay. All right. Our current statutes, 81103A6, prescribe that words in the masculine gender include the feminine and neuter genders. What this bill does is state that our future statutes should use gender-neutral language unless a specification of gender is intended. This is what I refer to as a Goldilocks bill. It's not too much, it's not too little, it's just right. Currently, the majority of states have a mandate for true gender neutrality in statutory construction. In fact, 6 have constitutional amendments, 20 have drafting manual mandates, 4 have explicit statutory requirements, 2 have some other obligation, leaving only 18, including Wyoming, with the masculine equaling the feminine. Some of these states with true gender neutrality have mandated that current statutes be rewritten, go backwards. That, in my mind, is too much. My Goldilocks, too much. Right? This bill makes no such requirement. We don't need to go backwards, only forwards. Too little, however, would be to do nothing. It's past time for us to change our statutory construction to mirror our own use of gender-neutral terms. While man was once truly a generic term, over the decades, it has come to mean adult males. It doesn't mean men and women. It doesn't even mean children. Our own debate recognizes this. Over my years in the legislature, I've listened to our floor debate and our leadership use gender-neutral terms. We don't typically use sexist language or even simply the masculine to equal the feminine. However, we continue to do so in our statutes and our bills. I recently served on our committee number 1, where there's lots of talk of crime, as well as perpetrators and victims. Our statutes use he, and honestly, our wonderful LSO staff tells those who testify before committees that it's acceptable to use the he to mean all people. However, you as well as I know that I and people who look like me can be perpetrators of crimes. We can also be victims. We can be witnesses. We can be jurors. We can even be the state vet, all of whom are referred to in our statutes as he. The use of gender-neutral language isn't trivial. Language influences the way we think, and the way that we think shapes society. Gender-neutral language helps reinforce our vision where both men and women, boys and girls, see themselves as equally eligible for the opportunities of our world and of our state. Investment in women has never been at the expense of men, especially in Wyoming. The current method of including the feminine and masculine language is not truly gender neutral. In fact, I could argue it could be confusing. Wyoming's motto of the equality state is built on giving women the right to vote before any other state. Let's continue to build on our reputation by using gender neutral language in our future statutes. This is a move that's not too little, it's not too much, but just right. And I would urge your favorable consideration.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was a bill that came to the females in the legislature. You notice all 12 of us are on here. But never mind, that's another story. I agree with the lead on this bill that language is not trivial. And what we are opening a door here is for something very different. I'm rising on the bill, not necessarily in support of it. I would urge us to give this some thought. I wonder if this isn't opening the door to something that we all have to be careful of in our speech from now on. I served on judiciary with the bringer of this bill, or the lead sponsor, and she's right. It was very difficult to have a conversation in gender-neutral terms. We had to talk about women that committed domestic violence, lest, you know, we paint the men as being the sole perpetrators of these crimes. It would just be so much easier if we could all accept that he or his means human. And I would just urge our most considerate thoughtfulness on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Steinmetz.
I too would, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too would urge some caution on this bill and also point us to our rules of construction for statutes 81103, which tells us words in the masculine gender include the feminine and neuter genders. So we are pretty well covered, and me being the gender that I am, I'm perfectly comfortable with that. So I would urge your thoughtful consideration of this bill as well. I'm less inclined to vote for it, and as I did not in committee as well.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we did, bring this as a sponsored by the females in the legislature because we thought it was kind of cute that it came from the females in the legislature, but that's really not what it's about. What it's about is communicating effectively in our statutes and communicating in a way that people will understand what our statutes mean. So frequently I've been asked by new legislators as we're working bills in committees, shouldn't we be amending this to include he or she? Because that's how we communicate today, and that's how we understand things. And the statutes aren't just for attorneys who understand, who know how to find the statute that was just read a few minutes ago. It's for all of us to be able to read and understand. And nobody's asking for this to be politically correct. We're asking because we're trying to get the language in an understandable form. Language changes over time. We used to have policeman. Then we had police officer. And maybe that was politically correct or not, I don't know. But now we have a definition in our statutes of peace officer, because language and understanding of language just changes over time. And so we're trying to reduce confusion, you know, particularly when you're talking about statutes where that might refer to spouses. And maybe we're talking about filing for divorce. And does he really mean he in that case? Does it mean the husband? So many of these sentences can be much better when they're created without even using those types of pronouns. And so I think overall it's just heading in a direction that's going to be more logical for us in the future. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think that reducing confusion is a very great goal for writing statutes. However, I admit that I signed on to this bill in a flush of sororal enthusiasm. And at this point, I would prefer to maybe see examples of how this would work and what the language, future language, would look like, maybe as an interim study, before I'm really comfortable making a big change like this today.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess kind of I wanted to touch on the amendment there. First of all, I don't think there's anybody in this body that does not agree that women are equal in every respect to men. And I want to point that out there. My concern with passing this bill simply is, for me personally, I wonder if we're delving into the world of political correctness. And that's the concern I have. The amendment that we adopted just a moment ago was to alleviate some of that political correctness. For instance, if we have, for amending or looking at a different a statute that was written in the past, that we wouldn't have to go through that whole bill then and change all of the language to gender neutral. And so I'm very pleased that amendment did pass, but that's the only concern that I have with this bill is where does it go from there? As it is right now, I don't think it's necessarily a bad bill, but that's my concern. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, and not to drag on the conversation very long, because I think that this bill is just such a simple little change that could make such a wonderful difference. And let me remind this body, and actually I guess it was a previous legislature, that feelings matter. And we changed a bill, we changed language, how we draft bills for people who are intellectually disabled. They didn't want to use the R word anymore. And so we said, out of respect for these people and their feelings, we will use intellectually disabled as the terminology that we use in statutes to describe these people. And I guess, you know, it's interesting to me how far things have changed. When I was a freshman legislator, the speaker came to me and told me that he wanted me to go to a women's legislative conference. And I said, no, I don't want to. And he said, no, I really think you should. And I said, no, I really don't want to go be with a bunch of people that feel like they've hit a glass ceiling that I've never encountered in my life. But let me tell you that 13 years now in the legislature, I've hit the glass ceiling, and I've hit it more than once. And I have been discriminated, and it has been because I am a woman. And I will tell you that words matter. Having said that, I am a chairman. I am not a chair because I'm not a piece of furniture. I am a chairman because that's what the title is. And until the title changes, I will be Madam Chairman. So I guess what we're trying to do with this bill is to take baby steps, just little steps, just the next bill that's written that says men, women, it says he, she, the party. I mean, there are a lot of different ways that you can describe it. But I remember telling Mr. Speaker when I declined going to that conference, I said, I am not a woman legislator from Wyoming. I am a Wyoming legislator who is a woman. I still feel that way. I still like my jewelry, and I still like my bling. I like to wear dresses, and I like to be feminine, and that's okay. But when you're talking about equal, I would like the respect that comes with the language, that just baby steps, just little things along the way. So that someday, my predecessor will be called something besides a chairman. Thank you.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Languages are historical artifacts, and they have value. And I think most of us know that probably most languages in the world, or many, and certainly most European languages, assign gender to all sorts of inanimate objects. And just think what a nightmare it would be to do a bill like this for those. English is interesting in that we generally confine the gender to actual persons, and I don't see anything wrong with that. To just do away with that, I think, is a crime against our language, and I think it's just an attempt to, by the politically correct thought police, to cast aspersion on our ancestors and on our civilization. I don't see the need for it, so I would encourage us all to stick a thumb in the eye of the political correctness police and vote this bill down.
Representative Kasparik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, you all vote however you feel is necessary to vote. I'll tell you a different little story from a little different perspective. I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse for a long time. When I went to school, there were no men in nursing. There were no men in any of our nursing classes until the year after I graduated. When I became a nursing instructor, you know, we had a mixture of men and women. And when you go into a hospital, oftentimes, you know, the men are not expected to be nurses, so they may be called something different. And the women were always, we were a little discriminatory. We always talked about nursing and nurses as she's. And so gender is different. Gender is specific. But how we play our roles in society has changed over the years. So words change, people change. We're all he's and she's. But I think that we have to respect that we all do different things, and we need to recognize that whenever I'm introduced to someone as a legislator, shake my hand, not my husband's.
Representative Pelkey.
Mr. Speaker, I stand in support of this measure, and I get up to speak largely because I appear to be the only one of my gender who has done so thus far. I'm a father. I'm a husband. My beautiful daughter may well become a lawyer. She may well become president. it's not political correctness to make accommodation in our language for that. I would have supported this bill without the amendment, but I most certainly support it now. We're not trying for a draconian rewrite of Wyoming statutes. What we're merely asking for is that we recognize that citizens of both genders should be addressed specifically in the law, and gender-neutral language allows that broad interpretation. He's and she's, when we're talking about victims and perpetrators, are inappropriate, and I would urge the body to vote for this measure.
Representative Freeman.
I will be brief. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I survived childhood with three sisters, all stronger and brighter than me, and a very strong mother. I'm probably the most incorrect, politically incorrect person when I've had a beer or two in me. And I think it all boils down to respect. I lost my sister about 4 years ago in a traffic accident. And when it was time to put together the tombstone, my nieces and nephews were not in the position to go through that. My oldest sister had a PhD, and when I put the tombstone together, I put doctor on the front of her name. And I was contacted by several people that thought that that was inappropriate to have a title, since my brother-in-law, who also died in the accident, didn't. It's a respect for both genders to have it neutral and to have it respectful and to have it accurate. I would urge your support of this bill.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you all for your good comments. Just a couple of comments in closing. One of the speakers talked about language as a historical artifact, and I couldn't agree more. And that in part is why I in no way want us to go backwards and rewrite our statutes, but I do want us to think to the future. I couldn't agree more with the previous speaker who talked about kind of respect, as well as thinking about, for example, in my home community, I help out with both boys and girls, but they always have me come and talk to the girls. And they go to a statewide event that both boys and girls do. The boys and girls go at different times, but these young women, they decide whether or not they want to be governor or secretary of state, or they want to be speaker of the House or president of the Senate. And I go and I grab my statutes, and we go over our statutes. And I need to explain to them the language that is being used. And honestly, they're confused. They don't understand why they don't see themselves there. And I just give the whole historical artifact kind of argument. But I see them deflated a bit. The last speaker talked ultimately about respect, and that's what it's about. And as we move forward, I hope that we can afford to both our men and women and boys and girls that respect. So I ask for your favorable consideration.
Is there any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 99 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The House Bill number 99 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. House Bill 99 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 81. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 81 from Representative Petroff, an act relating to the Wyoming Lottery, extending dates for distribution of lottery proceeds as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 81, Wyoming Lottery Distributions, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Barlow, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petroff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 81 do pass, and I will explain the bill.
Please proceed.
Thank you. So this bill simply adds 3 years onto the current distribution model for the Wyoming lottery. Nobody ever promised in the beginning that the lottery was going to make money, and nobody ever promised that local governments or schools were ever going to see the money from the lottery. But here is how the vote generally went. You had people who were absolutely against having a lottery in the state. You had people who were for the lottery regardless of where the money went because they were worried about business going across state lines. And then you had people who were undecided, and for them, it made a difference where the money was going, and it made a difference that the money was going to local governments, the first $6 million a year, and then that the rest was going to the permanent school trust. The lottery board is its own corporation and can make its own financial decisions, and they elected to distribute the first profits. They took out a loan initially to start the corporation, and they elected to distribute the first profits to paying off the loan up front rather than amortizing the loan over 10 or 20 years like a business might. And so as a result of that, we probably won't see a profit until fiscal year 2017. So this bill simply gives an additional 3 years to the profit distribution formula so that there's approximately a 5-year distribution with, again, the first $6 million going to local governments, the rest going to the school trust. So there is a handout on your desk with the fiscal year 2015 projections, just if you're interested in seeing that. And otherwise, I will stand for any questions.
Is there any further discussion? Any further discussion? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little clarification on this. Having been there listening to the start of all this, we didn't start this to not make money. We started it because we were going to make money. And just the chair might explain what she just said, that there isn't any money or we're not going to make money on this. Help me understand that. And then what we all understood is they were going to get $1 million, and that was going to be the startup fund. So everybody knew that there was going to be $1 million. Since that million, there's been another $1 million plus put into this organization. And we all got told that the first $6 million would go to the cities and counties, and now I just hear, well, we're going to pay off the loans first, and then if we make any money, then we'll start going back where we originally started. So I'm a little bit confused with this. If there could be some explanation on, first of all, we didn't get in it to make money, that statement, or however it was said. And then the idea that we were going to give money to the cities and counties first, and then we borrowed another million plus, and so the cities and counties aren't going to see money for a while. Just help me understand that, if you would, please, Madam Chair.
Chairman Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, because you're not a chair and not a piece of furniture to me. Couple of responses to the last questions. Yes, there was a desire that we got into the lottery to make money. I mean, that was certainly the argument that we had brought to this body for most years since 1997, that we were losing proceeds to our neighboring states. And so I thought the good chairman explained it rather well. Some of us were philosophically opposed. Some of us said, we want the lottery, and others based their decision on where the money was going to go to. This body on this side of the building said the money should go to cities and towns. The other body decided it should go to the school trust fund. We made a compromise in conference committee, and the $6 million is how it ended up. At no point that I ever remember did we ever say it was going to be a $1 million loan. We did say they were a private entity, they would have no state funds, and they would have to go seek a loan for their startup expenses. And so I do remember that after the initiation of the act, they got together, they met with multiple banks, had multiple banks bid, and I think at the end they secured up to a $3.2 million loan from a bank here in Wyoming. And it's my recollection they only spent $2.7 million of that. But that was really on us, that we did not want the state government to be involved at all in any kind of startup funds. That if they were going to do it, they were going to do it outside of the state purview on their own money, and they were going to be responsible for it. I think I answered all the questions. At this point, I'm not sure. I love the bill because, in my mind, you know, we just set the sunset out to be a certain period of 5 years so we could really start assessing how much revenue was coming in every year. There's a lot of figures, you know, from $5 million to $20 million of what the revenue would be. And so we just said, hey, let's give it 5 years. We'll start looking at what the revenue is every year, and then we can make some long-term decisions. And so the year was really just a placeholder. I do agree with the chairman. We never promised this money to cities and towns or to the state fund, but we did say if it became available, that's where it would go. And so at this point, the bill moves it out. I think there was an expectation the lottery would initiate a little quicker than it did, and the funding based on the cycle formula would come back quicker. If you read through the bill, it basically says any money by June 30th kicks over. And so when the lottery starts in August and they're paying back their initial loan, there probably isn't going to be a lot of revenue or proceeds that are triggered by this June 30th. And so then we have to wait a whole another year until the next cycle for any of that money to go to cities and towns. So I do understand when reading through it that the cities and towns did think they might be getting money quicker than when you reread through it and based on them paying back the loan first, what they're going to get. But hopefully that answers, just for the edification of the body, some of the, for those of you who weren't here, the arguments that took place here a couple of years ago.
Representative Edmonds.
Mr. Chairman, I just have two simple questions. If Wyoming has been losing money to a neighboring state, who is Wyoming losing money to now? And secondly, what are the adverse consequences if this bill is not passed? Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to piggyback on the comments made by the speaker before. It's very important to understand that the state had absolutely no money in creating the lottery. Everything that's talked about, the lottery board had to go out and acquire their own financing, whether it be $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, whatever it was. The state has never put any money into that organization, nor is it planning on taking it out. The comment was made, and some of the argument is, that the lottery was set up to make money. But as I go back and look at the bill, let's see. It says, the lottery games shall be operated and managed in a manner that provides continuing entertainment. And that, in my mind, is the reason that I brought the bill and the reason that it got passed, is for an entertainment value. And then if we decided, or if it was feasible and there was any money left over, then that money would come back to the state. I'd also like to say, being in business, I kind of appreciate that they're getting the loan taken care of right away. Boy, if that thing strings out for 20, 30 years, I don't know if that's the best interest or not. So if they get all those upfront expenses out of the way, then as we get in a little further and the revenues come in, then I think we'll know right exactly where we are. If this bill dies, I think was the question, what happens? Really nothing. It just continues with the formula that we have at the moment. It was the body on this side of the Capitol that decided we wanted the money to go to cities and counties. On the other side, they wanted it to go to the school foundation. And as the gentleman before mentioned, that was the compromise we got. I don't believe the lottery was organized to serve the best interest of the state, so they're doing everything they can to make money. But the lottery board itself really has no dog in the fight about where the money goes if it comes out. And I was trying to remember the last question, that the state's not losing money, or where is it going at the moment? I think the argument was that we were having a lot of money that was crossing state lines to other retailers, and if we could keep the money in the state, and we did limit it simply to lottery tickets, no video, no scratch, but customers would buy the tickets, number one, in this state. Number two, when they were buying the tickets, they would also buy other things, pop, candy, gum, potato chips, et cetera, and it'd be a big boost for retailers. Plus, the retailers do get a portion of the money. So I just wanted to clarify the fact that the state had absolutely no money in this at all. It's all going to be profit if there's anything that comes out of it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of different questions. Number one, if they're going to have a potential profit of $1.6 million, then it seems to me that if the fact that they just want to pay off their loan because they want to, we all have loans and there is a profit and then it ought to be distributed. To me, that was the purpose of why we put it in there, and merely because the board doesn't want to do it, that doesn't make sense to me. But also then raises another question. The board are trying to make these decisions, that who has the oversight over the board? And it seems to me, perhaps I'll bring a budget footnote, that have them come before the appropriations or some other entity to go through exactly what their expenditures are. I know what you folks see, but I see some of the expenditures that the lotto folks are putting out there, and they're spending a lot of money on things that I'm going, man, those are our prize monies and those state revenues going out to and promotions that I don't know if are in the best interest of the state of Wyoming. It may be in the sense of the lottery and the folks who are running it, but it just raises real questions to me. And so I'm opposed to this, and I think they should take at least $1 million of that 1.6 and pay it out to the state and get the ball rolling on it.
Speaker Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fact of the matter is, it is making money. It's making a profit. I've done a financing scheme like this. You think this is expensive, you ought to try starting a bank. And so the question is, it's making money. Now, what are you going to do with the money? What is the allocation of profits? And that's what we're talking about. We have profit money, and it's to be allocated. But we started with borrowed money. We started this thing $1 million in the hole. And so to the extent that we pay off the debt, we're making money. We're reducing our debt, which is profit to the state. When we get done paying that loan off, we're going to have an equity share equal to the line of credit that we started with. So the real question is, should we reduce the debt before we distribute profits elsewhere? You know, there's interesting things about profits. Some people will tell you that profits are just undistributed wages. Have you ever heard of that one? And so the question is, what are you going to do with the profit? Are you going to service the debt? Are you going to string the debt out over time, which really means that you're financing the distribution to the state? Or are you going to allocate profits to the debt until the debt's gone, and then you've got what I would call pure profit that goes to the state? But if we start distributing money to the state and carry the debt, then think about it. That debt is financing a distribution to the state. And we can do that, but we're not making money at the same rate. Well, we are making money at the same rate. It's just a matter of which coffee can you're going to put it in. And we're really good at coffee cans here. We save money everywhere. We don't carry debt in this state. And I don't know why we would conduct ourselves any differently on the lottery. I don't know why we wouldn't do the same thing that we've done. This state is virtually debt-free. Probably no other state can say that. And now we want to say we're a debt-free state, and we're proud of what we've done, and we're going to turn around and say that we're going to finance distributions to the state out of the lottery program. It's just inconsistent with our philosophy. So I think this is the right thing to do. In time, it'll make money. When it'll make money is when we have acquired that $1 million in equity that we acquired by paying the debt off, and then we'll have an equity position that will begin to make a return to us. And I submit to you that's the correct way to do it, and it's consistent with how we've run the state in every other aspect.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'll just say that I I actually agree with paying the loan off up front as well, and that's why this bill doesn't attempt to address that at all. It just says that for those of us who voted for the bill with the potential opportunity of that money going to our local governments, that we'll still have 5 years of guaranteed distribution to our local governments once we start, once the profit starts going to the distribution formula rather than the initial debt. So with that, I'll call for the question.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know how much transparency there is in this and how much we can know, what our expenses as the legislator on the appropriations asked. I think that's a very good question. We've been in it 1 year, and I've read that we peaked, we went up, and then it started falling off, the sales, the newness wear off, the new games. And so we're looking for something to help it maintain itself, so we put a new game in. I'm just wondering why we had to put the new game in. Well, I think it was because it wasn't making what. Is there any way that we can see that or those numbers available to the public to see? Here we are saying we want to go out for two more years on what we said was 19. So I'm just wondering if we can see some of that stuff so we really know what we're talking about. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 81 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 81 has passed. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 57. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 57 from the Labor Committee, an act relating to health insurance plans, amending requirements for review of an insurer's determination that a claimed service, procedure, or supply is not medically necessary, providing a definition of health insurance plan, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your Committee 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 57, Health Insurance Medical Necessity Reviews, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 57 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. I will briefly go through the Standing Committee Amendment. It's just other places in the statute where we need to make identical language changes that we did in the bill itself. And with that, I call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment, and then I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Kasperic.
Question having been called on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Kasperic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, House Bill 57, Health Insurance Medical Necessity Reviews, is a good bill for the consumers in our state. External review is a process whereby a consumer is challenging an insurer's final claim based upon the insurer claiming that the treatment was not medically necessary. So you buy your insurance, you make your claim, and you're given a final decision of not medically necessary. What we do now is we allow this to go to an external review and have an independent review board look at this and give that consumer an opportunity for one more review by an independent reviewer. what's happened with the passage of ACA is that they have taken this language and they've said that unless you comply with language in your statutes, they will take over external reviews for the consumers of insurance in Wyoming. So this bill makes just a couple of little changes to comply with that so we can continue to allow our department and our state to conduct these reviews. So the changes are on page 3, line 19, where it changes the opportunity for a consumer to, where it says within 60 days, and we scratch out the 60s and say 120 days of receiving written explanation that the claimant may request an external review. So we give more time to the claimant to ask for an external review. The next change is on page 4, section J, where it says that an independent review organization shall, within one business day of its receipt, forward all documentation information it receives from an insurer or claimant to the opposing insurer claimant. So it's a couple of time changes for the claimant to make an appeal and to get information to the external review team. And the other thing that it clarifies on the first, on page 2 of the bill is how we define health insurance and disability plans and places them in the statute so that they can also continue to be reviewed externally. So unless there are any questions on the bill, I would urge your aye vote.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 57 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 57 has passed Committee of the Whole. Go ahead. Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the gallery above us is the assessor for the the county, that's Lucky 13, Ms. Dixie Huxtable. Thank you very much.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 141. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 141 from Representative Madden. An act relating to alcoholic beverages, repealing the excise tax on malt beverages, conforming related provisions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 3 of Revenue, to whom is referred House Bill 141, Malt Beverage Tax Repeal, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Reeder, and Wilson, 2 no votes, Representative Edwards and Jennings, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 141 do pass. And I'll explain the bill. There's no amendments on it, ladies and gentlemen, but like all bills that come before us, this bill has a story to it. The genesis goes something like this. We didn't have a beer tax, you know, of course, during Prohibition, but when Prohibition ceased, a legislature in 1935, or it might have been in 1934, imposed a tax on beer. And the beer was, the tax on the beer was 2 cents a gallon. It was set at 2 cents a gallon that time. And it was pretty much in line with other states and so forth. And of course, at 2 cents a gallon, it didn't really strike a nerve one way or the other. That was back in the days when a gallon of this beverage probably sold for 40 or 50 cents. So 2 cents on a 40 or 50 cent purchase was meaningful, and it made some sense. And we've had, in the 80 years since this tax was first imposed, there's been, I'm told, dozens of attempts to change the tax and to increase the tax. And all of these attempts were not successful for one reason or another. And even since I've been in this body, since 2007, I should say, I've been a witness to five or six attempts in the years that I've been here, so I'm just saying this is probably a couple, three dozen times at least it's been a question that we talked about. And the question has been to increase it anywhere from maybe 2 cents more to 4 cents or up to 20 cents. I remember one time it came in at that amount, 20 cents higher. And it's never really happened. And this bill, ladies and gentlemen, came at the end of discussion of still another bill, House Bill number 140, that called for an increase in the tax. There was no interest in it this year, and for that, expecting that to be the case, I thought it would probably make sense for us to talk about, you know, just repealing the tax. So this is a simple bill that takes this 2 cent tax and repeals it, and I'll just briefly tell you why it really makes sense. First of all, I think we can see that the tax is a tax that has clearly outworn its usefulness. It was a meaningful amount of money. Right now, the tax brings in a grand total of $250,000 per year. That's for the whole state, $250,000, or about, oh, I don't know, $20,000 a month or something like that. And when we consider whether that's meaningful or not, you take current prices for a container of this 12-ounce bottle or 12-ounce can of this beverage now, may go for $3 or $3.50, let's just say $3, if you're at your favorite pub, and they charge perhaps a 6% tax on it. You take 6%, and it is, of course, it's taxable in addition to the beer tax, so you take 6% times $3, you get 18 cents. So every bottle of this beverage that's sold, the state does come back with, or state and local governments together, come back with 18 cents on every one. So if you have 10 of them, it's $1.80 you've paid. And in relative terms, there's embodied within one bottle of beer, there's 2/10 of a cent that's driven or that arises because of the beer tax. All right, so keep those two numbers in mind. There's 0.2 cents raised by the state by the beer tax. There's 18 cents raised by the state in the sales tax. In other words, the sales tax revenue is 90 times higher than the beer tax revenue. And that's if it's $3 a container. If it's $4, of course, it's 100 times, well over 100 times. And the other thing that I think is important to point out is that the industry has changed very dramatically, even since, you know, the 8 or 9 years I've been around here. It used to be a case where we had 3 or 4 major distributors, or maybe a few more distributors, but brand distributors would pay this tax by sending in a monthly check. And we still have this limited number of beer distributors throughout the state that send these checks in on a monthly basis. But the thing that's changed about it is we have 30 or so, I think testimony showed in the committee yesterday, or the day before, we have 30 microbrewers or mini brewers or whatever they call them. And the testimony is that the trouble they go to pay this tax is not really worth the revenue we're getting. Testimony from one person said that there was a microbrewery that paid $45 a year, the last year for taxes, for the beer tax. That was, you know, they're low volume, they 2 cents a gallon, takes a lot of gallons to get up to $45, I guess. And, anyway, that was divided up into 12 monthly payments of approximately, what, $3.50 a check they were sending in. I don't know what the cost of the bank was to process this check or the cost to the state was to keep track of it and so forth. But anyway, certainly he had to add on another $5 or $6 in postage in order to mail this $45 in, $3.50 at a time. So given the fiscal irrelevance of the task, or of the tax, I should say, and the dominance of other revenue, it's not that we don't get any revenue from it, and given the fact that we're not collecting any more from this tax now than we did in 1935. I think that's why the committee was assented to the idea that this tax be repealed and recommended a due pass to the bill. And it's a very simple bill. There was no amendments to it. But if there's any questions, I could sure ask them. It just depends on what your opinion is and you know, whether what I said makes any sense. So, thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I would just like to add my enthusiastic vote to, along with Chairman Madden's, and I would like to remind us that we learned in our ethics training that there is no conflict if the bill affects a large class of people. So I think that would probably be the case with all of us here. And I just want to remind us, too, that here is a wonderful opportunity when we are in competition with maybe another state to the south of us. We can do things that do not involve leafy green plants, and yet we have an opportunity for economic development, for small businesses, for beer tourism. I think that would be a really great thing. And reduce taxes and make nearly every one of your constituents happy. I do not see how you can resist this bill.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, just an observation of what 2 cents was in 1933 or 34, or whenever we did this. It was 5.7 ten-thousandths of an ounce of gold at that time. An ounce of gold was $35 an ounce. If we had tied it to the price of gold, the tax on a gallon of gas right now would be 69 cents per gallon, which would satisfy my mayor from my hometown.
Is that a Representative Edwards?
On and against the bill. I was in the committee and voted against it. I promised my constituents that I'd try not to raise any taxes, and I'm trying to keep to that. But I told him that I would not lower this either. If you decide to lower this one, maybe you ought to look at the other parts of the spirits, the wines and the alcohols and cigarette taxes also. One is no better than the other on that. And cigarettes won't cause you to be uninhibited whenever you're driving. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 141 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 141 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 62. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill number 62 from Representative Stevenson. An act relating to property tax exemptions, exempting faith-based camps from property taxation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 62, Property Tax Exemption for Faith-Based Camps, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Jennings, Laux, Reeder, and Wilson, 2 no votes, Representative Madden and Northrop, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill, Mr. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 62 do pass.
Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just by way of explanation on House Bill 62, and you'll see there is a Committee of the Whole amendment, and I'll kind of explain it all in one entirety, and then we can take a vote on the Committee of the Whole amendment. But let me tell you the problem first, and then kind of how we've decided to solve it. I became aware of a camp that is actually not in my district, but is in southern Wyoming. It's essentially a church camp, and that's what this bill is aimed at addressing. And this camp called me, and they had been in existence for about 13 years. They do, you know, youth and kids camps throughout the summer, and different churches and different youth groups come there. And they had been notified by their assessor that they were going to be, for the first time in 13 years, be levied property tax was going to be levied against them. And it is like an $8,000 or $9,000 bill. And we started looking into it a little bit, and really the reason that this assessor decided to start levying taxes against them was they had been claiming the exemption, which is found in Section 7 of the Exemption Statute 105, which says real property used exclusive for religious worship, church schools, and church parsonages. And the assessor essentially said, look, this isn't exclusively for religious worship, and it's not a church school, because, I mean, you have a chapel there, you may have worship services every night, but you've also got bicycles there, you've got archery range, you've got, you know, all these activities that kids do during the day, so you don't qualify under that provision, and we're going to tax you. And we tried to figure out different ways in which to shoehorn them in different exceptions, and through our investigation, what we also found out is that there are other camps across the state that operate essentially identically, and they are not being taxed by their county. So, and the testimony in the committee bore out the fact that there is inconsistency with how assessors are treating these groups across the state. And so the purpose of the bill was to ensure that these entities received the tax exemption that many of them are already receiving, but some are not. And now I'll tell you a little bit about how we tried to solve it originally, and how the Committee of the Whole amendment solves it now. And working with the good chairman from Revenue, we initially just added faith-based camps to the list of exemptions, as you can see there in the bill. One of the concerns that came out during hearing, and actually during some of the testimonies, a number of these camps, they may have church camps, you know, 90% of the time, but they may also have like a 4-H camp there, or you know, some other educational group come and use the camp for a week or so. And under this particular language, that would, read literally, it would throw them outside the exemption, even though clearly it falls within what I was contemplating. And there was also a lot of discussion about, well, we don't want people, you know, under the guise of this provision, being able to operate for-profit camps and get some sort of exemption in taxes. So what you will see in Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, which I would move at this time, is a little bit different approach that I think answers all the issues that we talked about in committee. And it essentially adds a new section right below the section that you saw amended initially, and it just talks about these camps, which are used primarily for religious educational training or worship, but, and here's the qualification that narrows it in, are not used for private profit nor primarily for commercial purposes. And those there is similar language found in a number of the other exemptions throughout the process, or throughout the statute. Those are the ones that receive the tax exemption. So what this does is it broadens it up enough that you can have a week or so, you know, you can have other nonprofit groups come and use your camp. But if you're primarily using it for these types of church camps and you're not doing it as a for-profit, you would be entitled to the exemption. And I think that zeroes in on what we really want to do with this bill. And I would ask for your favorable consideration on Committee of the Whole Amendment.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. Is there any discussion? Question being called on committee of the whole, amendment number one. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Committee of the whole, amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Discussion, Representative Greer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just, I like the committee of the whole amendment. Just a quick question, and maybe being a little lazy here, but will we have an affidavit process, or the rules and regulations allow for the owners of these to certify to their treasurer, something like we do for the ag exemption and some of the others?
Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, I'll answer. Maybe the chairman can correct me if I'm wrong. It'll be administered just like all the other exemptions. So, yeah, they will, as part of their exemption application, they'll have to certify that their use falls within this this provision.
Chairman Madden.
Yeah, the only thing I can add is that in B in the amendment, we get down to line 16, 17, we've got rules that deal with that in other Romanettes within these exemptions. So, you know, it's all set up that we can run it just about the way it is. It doesn't mean that we won't change rules at some point, but not very significantly.
Representative Connolly.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I think this goes along with the previous speaker, and so maybe the good chairman could answer this either. But I'm curious about the word primarily on line 17 of the amendment. What exactly does that mean, rather than just simply saying nor for commercial purposes? What does it mean to say nor primarily for commercial purposes?
Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, in truth, so that language is modeled after there's at least a couple of the other exemptions under here that have that exact same language. And so it's not new. It's something that the assessors are used to administering, and primarily means primarily. It means you can have the occasional exception, but most of the time you better be using it not for commercial purposes.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want the body to take a quick look at the fiscal note and realize by the actions of the previous bill and this bill what our revenue stool looks like here in the state of Wyoming, so that we teeter on pretty much a one-legged revenue stool. So keep that in mind when it comes time to look at revenue, and when we start talking about the budget, you'll realize how important revenue is. And it's just a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any further discussion?
I'm in favor of the bill.
Further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 62 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 62 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 150. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 150 from Representative Kroon, an act relating to peace officers, expending the arrest authority of peace officers for probation or parole violations as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 150, arrest for violation of probation, respectfully report same back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Halverson, Croker, Kroon, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell. Two no votes, Representative Esquivel and Winters, signed by Representative Croker, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 150 do pass. And I'll turn over the explanation of the bill to Representative Kroon.
Representative Kroon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill deals with those individuals that have been placed on probation within our court system. And basically, for some background, there's two types of probation that people can be placed on, supervised and unsupervised. And Committee Number 1 did some work last year at the request of the Department that handles the probation parole to eliminate the arrest authority for their agents in the field, because over time they've gotten away from actually making those arrests, and they've had law enforcement officers, certified peace officers within the state of Wyoming making those arrests. And so that changed the statute, and as a result of that, there was a new provision that was placed in the statute that allowed for peace officers to make arrests when they're given when they're getting written probable cause statements from these agents. And so what this bill simply does for those scenarios, if it eliminates the requirement that the written information needs to be provided to the law enforcement officer, and rather gives the law enforcement officer the opportunity, if they have probable cause that the probation has been violated, they can make that arrest. And that deals with the people that are on the supervised end of probation. Now, for the folks that are on the unsupervised probation, all an officer needs to do is know that there was a term of that probation which was violated. And I think it's important to note that probationary terms are different than new criminal charges. So, for example, if someone is involved in an alcohol-related crime, the court could order that his term and condition of his probation is that he's not allowed to consume alcohol, which would otherwise be a legal process and not against the law, but it's a term of that probation. So if someone is consuming alcohol, it violates terms and conditions of his probation and would subject him to go back to court to deal with that revocation. So on the unsupervised side, this gives, and it's the same standard as anyone would have, any law enforcement officer would have in making an arrest, and that's a probable cause standard. So I believe that this bill cleans up the language in the probation statute and provides for those offenders to immediately be taken back before the court. And what we see now is when the officer is aware of these violations, they have to go back to the county attorney or the district attorney, then they have to go to court, and the court would issue either a summons or a warrant, and that process can take some time. So this provides for immediate consequences for these violations, and with that I would urge an aye vote and answer any questions. Thank you.
Is there any discussion? Any discussion? Question. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 150 do pass, please say aye. All those opposed, no. House Bill 150 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 168. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 168 from Representative Petroff, an act relating to water and sewer districts, providing for assessments based on benefits as specified, providing a definition, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 168, Water and Sewer District Assessments, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Paxton, and Danswanacher, one no vote, Representative Lindholm, signed by Representative Danswanacher, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 168 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn the bill sponsorship over to Representative Petroff.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd first like to talk about what this bill is not. It's not a new tax, and it doesn't give the ability to tax any more than we can currently tax. What it does do is it allows water and sewer districts to assess fees for district improvements based on the potential impact that they have on their system. We pulled this language for these water and sewer districts directly from the improvement and service district statutes. So the language is exactly the same. We've already established in statute that these are fees, even though they are generally assessed as ad valorem taxes. These districts can currently charge for use, but the districts would like the ability to charge for infrastructure needs based on capacity of the system. So, for instance, you might have a large tract landowner with a small house, and in the same district have somebody with a smaller piece of property but a hotel. And obviously the hotel with many, many rooms is going to have a bigger impact than the house will have. And so we're just trying to create a system where the board can create some parity, again, based on use. And so we still elect our boards. We can unelect our boards. The policy would be developed by each board. Again, it's not a new concept. It's already in the improvement and service districts statutes. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question just behind the need. A number of the water and sewer districts that I work with will have addressed those situations by charging a different rate for larger taps or certainly the amount of water that can be used. They can set the rates to ensure that the more water used, the more people pay. It seems like this type of thing is easily done through a district's fee system. And so I'm wondering why the need to allow for an extra assessment, because they've already got, of course, their base property assessment, but why do we need to add another assessment authority when they have that sort of flexibility in their fee structure?
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my understanding is that this primarily would come into play when a new potential big user would want to come onto the system, and so that could be charged in one certain way. And again, I'm not familiar with them being able to charge for tap fees and so forth, but the way this is contemplated to be used is, for instance, the fee would be charged based on how many, say, flush toilets there are in a given structure. So it's just to give them more flexibility in the way that they can issue those fees. So I agree they are already able to issue some fees, but this gives them more flexibility.
Further discussion on House Bill 168? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this bill. Just as we have several large state agencies and departments that need to look at another funding model, I applaud this bill in that it adds to the options to fund water and sewer districts in this state. On and in support of the bill.
Further discussion on House Bill 168? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Dan Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 168 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 168 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 102. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 102 from Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to property taxes, requiring real property tax sales to be made to the highest bidder at public auction, specifying the amount to be paid for redemption and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred House Bill 102, Property Tax Sales, Highest Bidder, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Jennings, Madden, and Wilson. Those who voted no, Representatives Edwards, Laux, Northrup, and Reeder. Signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 102 pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will turn the explanation over to the Chairman from District 9, and he can also explain the Standing Committee Amendment because the amendment was his fault.
Chairman Zwanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, the Chairman from Revenue, and he is correct. When they get the bills out of the LSO, you know, you need to read over the entire bill, I read over the bill. I forgot to double-check on the enacting clause. So I kind of want to talk about the bill with the amendment, and then I'll call for the vote on the amendment. What this bill has to do with is in the Laramie County Treasurers, when people do not pay their property tax, this is the avenue that we use for them to be able to collect the property tax. They put it up on a, let me say, a lottery system at the moment. And at that lottery system, they put it up for people to come in and buy it, and you get to pay the amount of the taxes, plus you get to pay the interest and penalties and whatever else may come along with it. So the grand total, if you're lucky enough to have your name drawn out of a hat and purchase one of these properties, it's an 18% interest rate for the first year. And then if the taxes do not get paid, they continue on at a 15% interest rate because the penalty part drops off. So there's a 3% penalty to begin with. So that is what this bill has to do with. The comment that the fine chairman of revenue made has to do with the enacting clause, and it also has to do with part of what we're doing in the amendment. And on page 1, line 1, it states that it's requiring real property tax auctions to be made. And the amendment changes the word requiring to authorize. So, and the bill follows suit. So the bill is okay in that respect. It's important to understand, though, that we're not asking the treasurers to do anything different than what they've been doing for the last 10 or 20 years. This just allows them an option to try a different system. In our new era of electronics, several states have gone to quote unquote an auction, and as I introduce this bill, I know most people think of auctions as live auctioneers, but so much is done on the internet, and this would allow other people through the country to bid on these properties or in your communities and not have to attend the auction. And by doing so, the buyers have the option of paying a little extra money for the opportunity to earn that tax lien. Not to buy the property, just to earn the tax lien that's at 18%. So they might bid another 1 or 2 or 3% above and beyond what's owed on those taxes. Now, if the buyer buys those taxes and say they spend an extra $200 on the property and the owner comes in the next day and redeems his property, that extra money that the buyer spent will go directly into the county fund. One of the other amendments, I had it go into the county road fund. The committee, in their wisdom, decided to put it just in the general fund of the county, and so that's another part of the standing committee. So it's kind of a win for the counties. And when I was in committee, I showed that some of the counties south of us, some of those handle 2,000 to 2,500 properties in one tax auction, and they can do it all through the internet the way it's set up at the moment. And in some cases, it made up to $450,000 for that particular county. Now, I am not suggesting that that's going to happen in this bill, but it would add extra money in the coffers if and only if that treasurer decides they want to do it. And that is the important part of this bill, if and only if they decide they want to do it. Let me check real quick, see if I missed any important things on the standing committee. Otherwise, I will ask. I think the two big things is it deletes that requiring part. And I know some county treasurers had some major heartburn over that, and so we took that part away. So I think with that, Mr. Chairman, I would call for a vote on the amendment to the bill.
Is there any discussion on standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 102? Question being called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are now back on the bill. Any discussion? Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to provide some information to the body because different states treat tax sales differently. I've actually purchased some property at some tax sales in other states and have purchased some tax liens in Wyoming as well. Certain states wait until you haven't paid your property tax for a certain number of years. The two states where I purchased property, it was after 5 years went by, then there was 5 years worth of back taxes owed, and those states would then auction off the property. So the people who show up are actually bidding to pay the 5 years of back taxes, and then when the auction is done, they actually walk out with the deed to that property. Wyoming's is slightly different, where in Wyoming, the way that it works, if somebody doesn't pay their property taxes after 1 year, effectively what the state is auctioning off is a tax lien against that property, and the person can come in and redeem that lien, and you get paid back what you invested plus interest and penalties and things. If the person then doesn't pay their taxes the second year, the person who owns the lien can then pay the taxes for them, and so on and so forth until 5 years have gone by. After 5 years have gone by, where the person who bought that lien has paid all 5 years worth of taxes, they can then apply to have that lien, to execute that lien, and then claim ownership of the property, and eventually after 5 years get the deed. One thing I want to make the body aware of is if we make this change and somebody has an auction, it would be theoretically possible for somebody to come in and bid a large amount thinking, oh, that's a valuable piece of property, I want to own it, and then the person comes in to redeem it and they actually pay less. So the person could lose money on their investment. Let's just say, for example, there was $1,000 owed in taxes. Under the current system, you would just pay that $1,000, and then if the person redeemed it, they would pay you back that $1,000 plus 18% interest and fees, so you would get paid $1,118. Under an auction system, somebody could theoretically say, oh, that's a valuable piece of property, I want to bid on it, and so that maybe they bid $1,200, and then the person redeems the note, and they're paid back $1,118, and they say, well, wait a minute, I got paid back less than I invested in that property. I'm not saying whether that's good or bad. I actually am fine with the bill. I just wanted everybody to have all that information so you know that possibility is there, and you're voting on that with your eyes wide open. But it could create a buyer beware type of situation.
Chairman Zwanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in response to that comment, it's buyer beware right now. You can purchase a property with the system that they have going and find out that it has oil spilt on it and there's remediation involved. So, and it states most treasures on their website state right there, it's buyer beware. Sometimes you get some extras with the property that you don't like somebody's moved into the house and it's a very legal process to get them kicked out. So either system, be aware that that is the case as it stands now, as it will be in the future.
Representative Edwards.
Our state treasurer, or our county treasurer and the state treasurers of the state, said this bill not to pass. It's not broke. Don't fix it. So I vote no on the bill against this bill. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer, Dave.
And in response to that, I know an email went out a week or two ago with strict instructions, but I can tell you that our county treasurer, I think, has no problem with it because we're not changing, we're not requiring them to make any changes whatsoever. It just simply opens up an avenue if they want to. And with the amendments that we put on the bill, it's an either and or. Whatever they prefer. If that particular county decides they want to make a little money, then they can do that. And as you all know, our cities and counties are always crying for extra revenues, and here's an opportunity for them to take advantage of one.
Representative Paxton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a gentle pushback. I did get an email from the Treasurers Association signed by a person from this county who stated their opposition to this particular bill, even with the amendments. And the comment was that we're not here to make money on the liens, and if it isn't broken, don't fix it.
Further discussion? Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had some pause, I guess, because I do think the change, making it an option, certainly makes it better. But when you have the option to do something that I think is a bad idea, maybe it's not an option that we should give. And The way it's structured now, it's really a beautiful system now because you have the counties, and rather than having all the mechanism that they need to go enforce these tax liens, to go do the foreclosures, to seize them, to go through the redemption and everything, they essentially outsource that. They outsource it to the public, to whoever wants to come in and bid on these tax liens. And so when you come in and you pay, the county's made whole. At the end of the process, the county has all the taxes they were due. They have interest at a steep rate, 18% rate on the taxes that they were due. They are whole at the end of that process. And then you, as the tax lien holder, now you have the risk. But you also have the reward. So you have the risk of going out, waiting that four-year period, and then going through a foreclosure process and doing all that expense. But at the end of that, you get the reward. You get, for the payment of taxes of 1 to 4 years, you get that entire property and the value of that property. So you have a system now that rewards that sort of risk. And that's what makes the system work. When you change this in the way this bill contemplates it, what you now do is you turn that whole process into a profit center for the counties. And you can imagine sort of the incentives that creates within county administrators when they're dealing with delinquent taxes, when they're deciding about how aggressive to be, about whether to go through this process and allow those of us in the public to be a part of this process. They may well elect not to because there's some dollars in it that they can latch onto. But the beauty of the system now, and I haven't heard any complaints, at least from my neck of the woods, about the system as it works now. In fact, you go to one of these tax sales on August day, and I think most of them are in August, and you'll find full rooms full of people that put their names in that want to be a part of this process and that are a part of this process. And I would just urge real caution because once you change the dynamics and the balance and all the risk reward factors that go into the way we have the system now, I think you may end up in the long run it costing the counties money and not making them money.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, being an ex-irrigation district manager, I think that would affect irrigation districts in some places because they can actually charge their own assessments individually, or they can actually go through the county to have them do it. So I don't know if this would affect them, but it does make me have concern. So I'll probably vote against it.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, there's a lot of confusion about this, I can tell already. We heard about the beauty of the system, the way it works now, and you needed to be there for the testimony to see how the system works in some counties. In some counties, there's competition for this 18% money, but they can't do it through the auction, the fair way, where you're bidding against someone that is also interested in it. But here's how they do it. They go in and they find shills to go in and stand in the lottery system on their behalf. We heard them termed agents. So I don't know if you find a fellow that just has time on his hands, you say, how about if I give you $20 to come up here and stand in for me as an agent, so if you win the lottery and you're the one that gets to buy this property, I will stand in for you. You're my agent, and then I'll get my profits this way. You know, and so, yeah, it is a good system for people that are doing that, because we heard testimony in the meeting or in the committee that there is instances of one person, at least in one county, hired 100 agents to increase his odds on the lottery. That's how he was beating the system, and that's why he would probably say, please don't, he'd tell the treasurer, please don't go to an auction because this is a way cheaper deal. And the last thing I'll say, the reason when you go to a tax sale in some of these counties, and like we heard mentioned by one comment, that it's all full of people and it really works good. Well, it's full of shills that are in there representing the agent who has hired them for whatever to act in their behalf. Now, we're not saying in this bill that you got to quit doing that. And we're not saying that a treasurer has to switch. It's an option. You know, and how can you be against an option when you've got an option right now that's being used that's nefarious at best? So, take a look at this. Ask, if you got a treasurer and she's writing an email saying, don't vote for this, it just means that she doesn't want to do it and she doesn't have to do it. But someday when she retires, there might be somebody who'll say, well, there's a better way to do this than to set to fill up this room with shills that are acting on behalf of a person that's paid them to come to that tax sale that day. So, keep an open mind, at least for a reading or two. You can, if you think about it, if you really feel that it's we're hamstringing somebody or we're taking away somebody's freedom, or we're making things worse for Wyoming, just vote no on third reading. But to me, it's a solid bill. It wasn't solid when it was a requirement, and certainly that was not part of our discussion.
Chairman Zwanitz or Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What a great bunch of comments, and I really appreciate them. The first, I guess, I have to do is retract. Apparently, my county treasurer sent several of you an email that said they're still against it with the amendments, and they do not want to be a profit center. So I guess we could look at that one of two ways when the appropriations bill comes out. Back up the bus. So, but I believe the fine chairman of revenue addressed about the full room of people. The irrigation districts would get money back to their counties if that comes with them and they go to auction. The good thing about auctions compared to the lottery system at the moment, when you go to these, they pick out a number. You got to say yes or no. And so if you're there trying to invest money, you don't have an option to which property you pick out. If it is an auction, then you do away with a little bit more of that buyer beware, because you had an opportunity to go and only bid on those properties that you're really interested in. So all this liability that we hear about, some of that should be softened, because guess what? You're the one that actually chose that property all by yourself with no help. You didn't have that, well, if I don't take this one, I probably won't get another one, and I'm trying to get a little investment property. So I think that's an important thing to take a look at. All I can tell you, in several counties across the country, people are paying on an average, looks like, 2.5% to 7% more. And who wouldn't pay 7% extra money to get a chance at 18% and or for the total possession of the property? So it's a tough one when your treasurers are emailing you. I understand that part. But, let's give us an opportunity to maybe actually to look at a new way of doing things and maybe having a profit center. Thank you.
Further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 102 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 102 has failed. Pursuant to House Resolution or House Rule 6-6B, having failed a voice vote, a standing vote is required. All those in favor say stand, please. Those opposed, please stand. More than 10. Having failed a standing division vote, the chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
Baker.
No.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger. Blackburn excused. Blake.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Jennings.
Aye.
Kasparic.
No.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Lockhart.
No. Aye.
Lockhart. Lockhart, no. Louts.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Pieperinen.
No.
Pinnell.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz. Stubson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 11 aye, 48 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 102, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Privilege of the floor, Mr. Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Up in the north stands is a young man who has come to Wyoming from the land of ducks and beavers to look after my place so that I can be down here and do my work. So I'd like you to welcome my son, Charlie Westerman.
Representative Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of order here. In this last Committee of the Whole debate, we started referring to emails by other elected officials. And I want to caution the body to try and refrain from that. Organizations, companies, you saw what happened with the debate and how it affected the vote. So in the future, every bill we bring does affect an agency or another area of state government. And the way they have influence in the vote and the debate is in those emails. So try to refrain from referring to emails by other elected officials.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 134. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 134 is presented by Representative Miller, an act relating to seized property, specifying that proceeds from the state of forfeited property shall be deposited in the crime victim's compensation account, repealing conflicting provisions and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 134, Seized Property, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Miller, Pelkey, and Winters, two no votes, Representatives Crone and Pinnell, and signed by Representative Croker, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Croker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 134 do pass, and I will turn explanation of the bill over to Chairman Miller.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 134 is concerning seized property. There's another seized property bill that we worked in the interim that's moving through the Senate right now. It'll make it over here a little bit later. The subject of this bill was discussed at least a little bit in the interim committee, and it became obvious to some of us that, on the seized property, and this bill only concerns seized property after it's been gone through court, the ruling's been that the guy's convicted or the lady's convicted, and there's a proper court procedure that's following this seized property. And in this particular bill, instead of the seized property flowing back to the law enforcement agency at some point, the net proceeds received will flow back into our victim's compensation fund. That's on page 2,
lines 9 through 13 is where that is outlined. So it's a pretty simple bill. What we're deciding here is, do we want law enforcement to continue to have an incentive to seize property that at some point, generally at least part of it, will come back to whatever agency did the seizure. I see that as an incentive. It doesn't go through a process with elected officials involved, and I have a problem with it. Now, some others have a problem with it. If they need more money, I think it should go through the legislative process. If it happens to be our state police, maybe the county process, the county commissioners, if it happens to be our sheriffs, or the city, if it happens to be city police. So it's real clear. It's a policy of this body, whether we want to have money out there that doesn't have this type of oversight that we have here on the floor. So with that, I'd ask for your favorable vote, and I'll stand for questions.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill for two primary reasons. Number one, I think that the existing statutory language is working. What we're seeing in these seizures, you have the appropriate court process that you'll go through. The items are seized. There's a split between the state and the local entities that are involved in this, a 70-30 split. And I know from in my own jurisdiction, this money is very useful in terms of training, in terms of equipment, and in terms of continuing the ordinary law enforcement function. So switching it from the law enforcement retaining the property or the proceeds to the crime victim compensation fund just doesn't make much sense, because the law enforcement's involved in these seizures. They're involved in actually apprehending these criminals and making these cases. They should be entitled to the proceeds from the criminal activity. So, number one, I think that the existing language is appropriate and it's working. Number two, if the body would look at page 3, section 2, it talks about the repealer provisions in 35.7.1049. And this is the other portion of the bill that doesn't make much sense to me, because it eliminates the options of what the commissioner can do with this seized property. And in fact, it's actually counterintuitive, because at some stage you may want to retain that property and not sell everything. For example, if firearms are seized, you may want to retain those firearms for the crime lab. So the repealer is certainly problematic, but I think above all else, the existing language works. The existing system works. So I would urge a no vote. Thank you.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe this previous speaker is correct. I don't see a problem here in Wyoming with this right now, but I've seen and heard all kinds of problems in other states. And frankly, the other bill that's moving through the other end down there addresses some of those issues. But again, I just don't like the idea that some elected group doesn't have oversight of seized funds that go in here. If they have a property that has value to it, those repealers, whether it requires them to sell it instead of giving it to someone. They can't add it to their gun collection at the agency here in Cheyenne. A few of us have been there, and it's a room, well, it's not quite as big as this room, maybe a quarter size this room, and it's filled with every type of firearm you could think of. You know, take it to auction it and sell it to someone that has to go through the firearm registration process, and the proceeds will flow back to the agency and ultimately would flow with this bill to the victim's compensation fund. The same thing with vehicles. If they need a new vehicle, ask the people that are in elected office for that vehicle. If you need a new patrol car, you need a new anything, is go through the process and apply for it. This is money that doesn't come through the normal process. It's something, you know, a few years ago I wasn't even aware was going on, but I kept hearing about this stuff in other states where money was being seized, sometimes with no convictions. In fact, most of the time with no convictions. And it was a difficult process to get that money back. That's not what this bill is about. That's taken care of in that other bill. But this bill is just looking at when you do have a felony, or even, I don't know if it applies to a misdemeanor or not, but if it's gone through the court system, They get to keep the seized property. The funds will flow into the victim's compensation fund, which could use the extra funds. Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill, the concept that we're going for here is the same concept that's already in place in a lot of cases. For example, if you get pulled over and have a ticket written for speeding, the department that writes the speeding ticket does not keep that money. The money goes to our schools. And that's the same principle here, is that we don't want to give law enforcement an incentive that the reason that they're pursuing a crime is because they're going to profit off of it. So it just allows for the funds to go somewhere else. If somebody has a different distribution model, I think we'd be open to that. But I think the principle is the same that's in other laws, that you don't give law enforcement the incentive to go make an arrest because their department is going to profit monetarily from it.
Representative Pinnell. Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm against the bill for numerous reasons, but when we were in committee on this bill, we never heard from the victim compensation fund, somebody from that representing that fund. We heard testimony that there's already an avenue that they do receive money. There's a couple of different avenues from the state and also from the federal government. And from the sounds of what we were told, the fund is quite sound. We did hear also from a representative from municipalities, which, you know, it's ironic. We heard here earlier that they don't want to, they'd like to have revenue coming in, and here we are taking revenue away. Through their budget process, law enforcement tries to budget different items to fight the war on crime, and this is basically against narcotics and drugs and so forth. There's a rise in heroin. There's a rise in meth. You know, all these drugs are coming into our state and have been here. With the money they utilize it for training. They utilize it for equipment. Some of the vehicles that are seized, you know, you say you want to auction them, but some places they use those for dare vehicles. So those vehicles are much easier to utilize instead of going out and buying a brand new vehicle for the dare program. And eventually those vehicles wear out and you have to replace it. And we, in certain areas, I know they take those vehicles and they take it to the school, and they have, if the vehicle that's seized is not real mechanically sound, they can go into the school district and have them work on it. So, again, I'm again the bill. Would hope that everyone would vote against it, and so to at least keep that money working for law enforcement and fighting crime. Thank you. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 2 points. The Victims Compensation Fund receives applications averaging about 450 to 500 a year. Last year there were 600 applications for funds. 40% of the Victims Compensation Fund comes from the federal government, VOCA, the Victims of Crime Act. Well, this is going the way of a lot of other federal funds that are going to the states, and we want to make sure that this fund is not kept short. That 600 victims last year that applied for these funds. My second point is that by taking the excess funds after the sale of the forfeited property into the Victims Compensation Fund and taking it away from law enforcement, is that it will force law enforcement to come and through normal appropriations channels come to the legislature, go to their county commissioners, and say, this is what we need, this is what we need it for, this is how much it's going to cost. This is a relatively undocumented source and expenditure of funds, and I think the time is now to turn it around, give it to the victims, and have law enforcement go through the normal appropriations process for their funds. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm for this bill, but I have a couple of questions. A previous speaker drew our attention to the repealer, and that reminded me several years ago when I was running, I filled out one of those surveys that is sent out by the usual suspects of people who send out surveys, and they asked me a question about what would I do with this sort of situation. So I called my local law enforcement agency and asked them what did they do with firearms, and I won't go into all the length of that, but the first thing that they did, and the source of my question is that if possible, they attempted to return property to the original owner, because a lot of times, you know, if it was a firearm, that was this particular survey, it had maybe been stolen. And so I just want to be assured, because I couldn't read it all that fast from the bringer, that we're not somehow forestalling the ability of the law enforcement agency to then seek out the original owner before the crime was committed and return their property. I mean, I would hate to lose something to a robbery and then find out that before I could hustle down there after court or whatever, somehow my property was sold away. So that's the main question. Then the other one is, again, just in the repealer, and what the language that they're repealing says that all the things that we're repealing are not subject to replevin. So I would just like to know what a replevin is, and if we've repealed it now, is it subject to replevin, whatever that is, and does it matter?
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't catch the second part of that, but I've got the first part. Basically, in the bill, top of page 2, line 3, at the end, it says redemption. That's where the property is returned. And, you know, this impacted my family a few years ago, and my son had his firearm stolen out of his vehicle. He didn't even know it was gone for a while because they opened up the case, took it out of the case, and he noticed the case was in the car and never checked it. Well, a few months went by, and he realized it was gone, and then a few months later, the local police call him and say, we have your firearm. And they caught the guy in some other burglaries. So it does get redeemed. Just heard another situation where another person of this body has a son that's had someone steal things out of his vehicle, and his items haven't been redeemed yet. So I don't know exactly what the timelines or how that works. Maybe someone that understands law enforcement better can do that. So if you want to repeat your second question, or I'll get it here. And
Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, just for a couple different things. Replevin basically is an action to recover your private property. So it's just a legal term to recover the private property. I've got a couple suggestions to the body. We'll probably, because of some of the actions we've done today, you know, we're going to lose money because of beer tax. So we could take these funds and put it back into the budget to take away the money we're going to lose because of the beer tax. Or we could fund lotteries so they can make money to pay us so that we can actually make money off of the new lottery system that we have. We could supplement the water and sewer districts for additional tax that probably will result in. Or we could just kill the bill, one or the other. Thank you.
Representative Pieperinen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill. The previous speaker mentioned something about a survey, and I'm constantly doing surveys amongst the electorate of my district, and I sent many emails out, and I received 11 back, all in favor of the bill.
Representative Pinnell.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You know, in answer to some of the questions as far as this being undocumented and not knowing what the law enforcement's doing with this money, first of all, when they do seize the money, it's through the process of the court. So there is a check and balance on this. They, if they take this money illegally and seize it, they don't get to keep it. They don't get to use it. It goes back to the individual on that. So there is a checks and balance on the matter. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Further discussion? Question. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Croker's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 134 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 134 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. I think it was Patty, it was 28-27, correct? House Bill 134 has failed, a standing vote. Pursuant to House Rule 6-6, we will now have a roll call.
Allen. Baker.
Point of order. Yes, sir. The count of the vote was 28-27, and I had not voted. I voted against it, making it a tied vote, so as the chairman, I called it failed. My apologies. Resuming the roll call vote.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin. Barlow, Berger, Blackburn excused, Blake, Burkhart, Bird, Campbell, Kennedy, Clem, Connolly, Dayton, Edmonds, Edwards, Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay, Greer.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller. Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petroff.
No.
Piperinen.
Aye.
Pinnell.
No.
Reeder.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 30 aye, 29 no, 1 excused.
House Bill 134 has passed Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor?
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill number 61, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 94, recommended do pass. House Bill 109, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 89, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 106, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Representative Berger moved that the House rise and sit again. House Bill 96, recommended do pass. House Bill 99, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 81, recommended do pass. House Bill 57, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 141, recommended do pass. House Bill 62, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 150, recommended do pass. House Bill 102, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 134, recommended do pass. Assigned by Representative Tom Walters, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Walters. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 140. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by a vote indicated. Senate File 6, Aquatic Invasive Species. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 141. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 38, Controlled Substances. First offense for possession. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 142. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by a vote indicated. Senate File 85, Adult Foster Care Pilot Project. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 143. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 88, Emergency Care Stroke and Acute Heart Attack Patients. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 144. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 94, Substance Abuse Assessments-Non-Residents. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 145. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 46, fire misdemeanors. Ayes 21, noes 9. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 146. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Joint file number 2, ayes 27, noes 3. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 83, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted.
Just a quick second. Too much noise going on.
Your committee, number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 83, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Halverson, Croker, Crone, Pinnell, Winters. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Miller, and Pelkey, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee, number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 90, Student Religious Liberties, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 123, Juvenile Records-Expungement, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 132, Juvenile Confidentiality and Court Proceedings, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, one no vote, Representative Croker, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 151, Governmental Immunity-Waiver for Hospital Employees, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 10, Education State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation of a due pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stepson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 72, Volunteer Firefighter at EMT Pension Account, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, two no votes, Representative Nicholas and Stepson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 120, Tribal License Plates, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, two no votes, Representatives Burkhardt and Stepson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 70, the Omnibus Water Bill Construction, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass for the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Yeagie, Larson, Lindholm, and McKim, signed by Representative McKim, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivision, to whom is referred House Bill 45, Healthcare Sharing Ministry, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye. Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, Danswanitzer, one no vote. Representative Byrd, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 127, Termination of Employee-Wages, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 166, Electoral Safety and Fire Prevention Amendments, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer, signed by Danswanitzer, Chairman.
Re-referrals, Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 70, Omnibus Water Bill, to your Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, House Bill 70 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Any other re-referrals? Committee announcements. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet Wednesday, January 28th at 8 a.m. in Room 302 to discuss House Bill 114, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Education Number 4 will meet Wednesday, January 28th upon adjournment tomorrow afternoon, and we have House Bill 164, 86, 159, and 147 to be considered.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting tomorrow morning, Wednesday, January 28th, in Room 1699 to hear... House Bill 119, Death with Dignity.
Chairman Zwanisser, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today, H-17, to hear the following four bills, House Bill 143, 125, 77, and House Joint Resolution Number 8.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in Room H-18 to consider House Bill 103, Fireman's Pension Amount Benefits Adjustment, and House Bill 128, Notice Requirements.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 2 will meet upon adjournment to hear the following re-referred bills, House Bill 11, Distance Education Task Force, House Bill 44, Emergency 911 Fees, Prepaid Wireless, House Bill 87, Content and Performance Standards, House Bill 105, Next Generation 911 Task Force, and, Mr. Speaker, your committee will meet Wednesday, January 28th at 9:30 a.m. in Room 204 to hear the re-referral of House Bill 103, Merit Career Technical Scholarships, and we'll meet upon adjournment tomorrow, Wednesday the 28th, to hear re-referred bill, House Bill 32, Hemp Extract Regulation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Wednesday, January 28th, 10 minutes upon adjournment in Room H-17, where we will consider three bills, House Bill 138, Workers' Compensation for Special Education Teachers, House Bill 139, Unemployment Compensation Protests Time Limit, and House Bill 122, Workers' Compensation Permanent Disability.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker, can I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Everybody, I just wanted to remind you that tomorrow morning at 6:30 over in the Hersler Atrium, we'll have the Capitol Commission Bible study. So everybody who's up and around, come over and join us.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I also have privilege of the floor?
Please.
Ladies and gentlemen, you should have received in the last week or so an invitation for the 2015 Governor's Prayer Breakfast. This is the same type of prayer breakfast that we do at the Washington, D.C. National Prayer Breakfast, and it's hosted by Governor Matt Mead, and they need a response by February 2nd. And if you don't have the card and you need further information on that, please get with me. Thank you. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I would like to give you the general file for January 28th, and I have one change, so if you'll all listen up if you have your piece of paper. We will start out with House Bill 53, 93, 54, 27, 123, insert 132, 120, 45, 127, 151, 10, 166, 84, 90, 72, 83, and 28. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. January 28th.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock a.m.